Tonight's speaker is somebody that I'd like to say as a friend, and I think more than anything, she is a great example of how to have a life and how to have fun in recovery. She really models very healthy social behavior, and if you don't know tonight's speaker, or if you're struggling with how to have fun and how to have a life in recovery, I encourage you to get to know her. She's really a special lady. She's a very generous person as well, and she's been very kind with sharing her gifts, not just with this group, but she's given this group quite a few things. She also gives a lot to the people around her, and I'd ask you to please offer a warm welcome to Alice.
What a wonderful introduction. My name's Alice, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful to be here. I'd like to welcome all the newcomers, our visitor from, I believe, Redlands, and all the people that took chips. You know, the one that stands out in my head is the woman with 7 days. Congratulations. But, 7 days are rough. My home group is Wednesday Noon Clodbusters in Tulare, and I have a lot of people that are from there today, and I thank them for being here. I have my outside home group, the A-Team, that's here, and I love them dearly. This is the group that, outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you learn to have fun, you know, and it's really important to do that, you know, in your sobriety. My sobriety date is July 13th, 2008. And my story is, it's like everybody else's story. I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1986. But I'll back up with that. You know, I came from a family that my parents were immigrants and very strict Catholic upbringing, and there was no alcoholism in our home. The only thing that I can think that made me feel a little bit different is that my parents, because of their ages, should have been like my grandparents. And, you know, growing up in the 60s and the 70s, it was always really, it was rough because they treated me like my older siblings that, you know, were raised, you know, 10 years prior. And I don't know, I just always felt somewhat alone and almost, not that I wasn't wanted, because I don't want to play like I'm a victim, but it was just, it was different, you know, and I feel like my older siblings were more like my parents. I never saw any alcoholic behavior, you know, growing up. I had a grandfather who would drink wine at dinner who lived with us, but, you know, I never saw any kind of alcoholic behavior. You know, being in that type of family and, you know, being a baby in a sense where my sisters were marrying off when I was like 4 years old, you know, I just wanted attention. You know, I wanted any kind of attention I could get. And my parents, I just think they were too old to give it to me, you know, and God bless them, they did the best they could. But I struggled with insecurity, you know. I'm reading something about that now, and I think, you know, I can remember, like, at about the age of six, just feeling like I didn't fit in, and feeling really insecure. And if you saw my life on the outside, I mean, I was a pretty outgoing child, and, you know, I hear stories, you know, kids having a drink at six and 10 and 11, and, you know, that wasn't even an issue. It was just feeling like just something wasn't right. And then there were some things that happened, you know, as a child, and I don't have to hit on that, but I learned how to have secrets, you know, and at a young age when you're, you know, trying to develop and grow up, and, you know, you're taught not to lie, but, you know, you have these huge secrets that you have to lie about. And that's when I started to feel different at about 7 years old, that, you know, something wasn't quite right. Even though there wasn't alcoholism in the home, it was definitely dysfunctional. You know, the secrets that I had were making my life just not what a little kid or a little girl's life should be like. You know, being with those insecurities, and I know for me, when I'm insecure, I try to overachieve. And, you know, I've been to a lot of meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always hear about people that are overachievers, and I definitely was an overachiever. You know, I tried to do whatever I could to get that attention from, you know, the parents. And, you know, I grew up and I went, and I was in the public school system, and then my mother thought that it would be really good at, you know, seventh grade to put me in Catholic school. So, you know, if I, at that age, going into public school, that bad things would happen to me, so send me to Catholic school, you know, and God knows most of us in here are Catholic school kids. But, you know, I did that, you know, and that was a rough time for me, you know. It's like I had to leave all my friends and go to Catholic school, and, you know, and I still didn't fit in, you know, and I kept doing all those things to get that attention. And, you know, I remember, like in the eighth grade, there were some kids that, you know, would drink alcohol and get in trouble, and I just never was around, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I went on to high school, and I still, you know, was overachieving. I mean, my senior year, I think I almost had a mental breakdown because of everything I was involved with. And it wasn't that I was shy, or I just tried to throw myself into everything just to get that attention, you know, almost to the point where, you know, I was really like the principal and the deans and the teacher's pet, and my friends looked at me as like a, ugh, she is so weird, you know. And, you know, I had friends around me drinking. I experienced, you know, drinking in high school, but it was never, I was just too afraid of what, you know, my parents would do, because they were extremely strict. And so it wasn't an issue. I went to community college here in town, and a good friend in this program, Charlie M., I met him for the first time when I was about 19, and I was real good friends with his sister. And boy, Charlie was such a partier, and I used to think, geez, that guy is like, I can't believe how he just parties at his house and does all these things. And I still wasn't there. And I know why, though. I know the fact that because of the upbringing and, you know, being the people pleaser that I was, that I just wanted my family to think that I was all that and that I was the perfect kid. When I got out of those, I guess you'd say the home atmosphere, and I went away to school, I don't know what happened, but at about 20 years old, you know, away at college, now I have there's no one to stop me from doing anything. It was like, it became a lot of fun, you know. And, you know, we talk about crossing the line, and even though I wasn't, you know, one of those at 14, you know, 12, 16, it was just waiting. Alcoholism was just waiting for me. And, you know, I crossed that line at about 21. In 1 year, I was a full-blown alcoholic. I was immediately put on probation. My family, my parents didn't know that. You know, my friends who I partied with, you know, we would party and they would go to school. You know, I was too hungover. I had extreme hangovers, you know. I remember at that time, and it was like, it wasn't a matter of, you know, I'm not going to drink today. I was just, you know, I would drink that afternoon to feel better from the hangover. And, you know, I was always the one that, when anybody wanted to go and do stuff, I was ready to go. You know, I loved how alcohol made me feel. I was at a conference this weekend, and, you know, someone was explaining how it just would go down. And I can't say it was like maybe the first 5 times, but after it was in my system those times, I can remember finally when I knew that I found what I had been looking for. All of a sudden, I didn't have to overachieve to get the attention. Alcohol gave me everything I needed, you know. And it's really crazy, because it wasn't like I couldn't make friends. And, you know, I always loved, you know, Bill, you know, I like to have fun in sobriety, but I really liked to have fun when I was drinking. And but alcohol made everything okay, you know. You know, that 1 year, I was going to, it was even, I had a fake ID, and we would go to clubs. It was up in San Luis Obispo. And, you know, I'd go into bars, and I always could drink more than everyone else, and guys included, you know, and I actually thought that was like a great thing. You know, I didn't look at it as, you know, is there something wrong here? No, I thought it was really great because then I could start earlier, I could, you know, continue, and as my life progressed, you know, it was like I only wanted to be around the people that drank like I did. The good friends that I had, you know, it wasn't that they left me, I left them, because I only wanted to be around people that drank like I did. I met my first husband in a bar, and I say first because there's a long line of them, but, you know, I met him, and he drank like I did, and he partied like I did, and I thought, this is it, you know, I want to marry this man. I want to be with him for the rest of my life and party. And, you know, he was in a band, and I didn't realize at that point that's where my geographical started. You know, I called up my parents, and I said, I have met, you know, the man I'm going to marry, and I'm off. And they were just crazed. They were like, if you do this, we're never going to speak to you again. But it didn't matter. You know, I had alcohol. It didn't matter what they said, what they did. I was off. And, you know, he's on the road, and, you know, if anybody knows that kind of lifestyle in bars, and I mean, it's a lifestyle. And I was young, and I just thought that there was nothing that was ever going to, you know, hurt me or stop me. And along with that lifestyle, you know, it was a couple of years, maybe not even a couple, maybe about a year, that I heard the other day at a meeting, instead of outside issue, a side dish that was brought into my life, and I like it better. It just sounds really cheap, you know, a side dish. And, you know, it was brought into my life, and it just took it to the next level. You know, and, you know, I do not want to sit up here and say, you know, it started with alcohol for me and it ended with alcohol, but there was a lot of stuff in between. I can't even explain how the addictions with the alcoholism and the other stuff, I became someone that today when I look back, and sometimes I have these little, they're not like flashbacks, because I do remember, I was a blackout drinker also, but I do remember a lot of the stuff I did, that it, by the grace of God, that, you know, I didn't hurt anyone, or, you know, I was put in situations where I could have been really hurt. And, you know, the husband, I mean, he was on his own mission also, and, I mean, you know, two alcoholics, I mean, it got ugly, you know, and pretty soon it was like, you know, there's got to be a problem when you're hiding, you know, the booze and all the other stuff from your mate because, you know, you want to have more. And I mean, if I have to think about, you know, today in marriages, it's like, you know, children and financial issues, and those are the things that people argue about. For me, it was alcohol and the other stuff, you know. It was like, oh my God, I always thought he had more than I did. And, you know, it's a disease of more, and all I wanted was more, 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 more. And, you know, I didn't talk to my parents for almost 2 years. And, you know, the kind of person that I am today, it's almost like it's an unbelievable is what that's what alcohol did. You know, it cut me off totally from my family. They had no idea what was going on. They just thought I had lost my mind. And, you know, if I just came back and they sent me to some Catholic retreat in Portugal, that I would be saved, you know. Seriously, that's, my mom was like, you know, this is where you got to go, and because you've lost your mind. And, you know, they never saw me drunk, you know. After that 2 years, when they started speaking to me and I'd come home and visit, I would control it and control it and control it. I could only be there for 2 to 3 days. 2 is like perfect. But again, I was still looking for their approval, so they never saw it, you know. And I did that for a few years, and one night it was, you know, these are crazy-ass stories that we do as alcoholics, but, you know, I went into the bar where my husband was playing at that time, and some chick was She wasn't doing anything, but I was high and drunk, and I was done. You know, it was like, I'm off, you know. And I had just been looking for something to be done, and we happened to be in Seattle. You know, a lot of people ask me, how did I end up there? And I don't tell people outside the room how I ended up there, but I ended up there because that's where we were at. We were playing. And so I wasn't going to move back, you know, to Tulare, you know, after leaving after college. And so I stayed in Seattle, and, you know, I tried to make a life for myself. And it's a little hard to do that when your life is alcohol. You know, I was a functioning, you know, because I knew that I needed the money to pay for my booze, you know, and I continued to go to bars, and I met my second husband. And, you know, it's like, I was like again at that conference, and it's like, you know, only in AA that you can talk about meeting your mates, you know, and getting married immediately. I mean, this guy, the divorce was dry, the ink was dry on that divorce, and I was in Las Vegas getting married, and drunker than a skunk. And again, you know, I called my parents, and, you know, and I wonder why they always thought I was just a little off, you know. I always call them, and it's like, hey, you want to come to my wedding? And they're like, well, who are you marrying, you know? And they never had met any of my cousins, you know. And it's like, and I used to think, God, they are so closed-minded. They live back in that, you know, farm town, and they're never going to get it, you know. And it was like, yeah, it's real normal to meet people and, you know, jet off and get married. Anyway, this guy, he had a lot of the side dishes, and, you know, he liked to drink, and that was the attraction, you know. That was the only attraction, because when I woke up in Las Vegas, I'm like, oh, tell me I didn't do that. And, you know, basically I did it, you know, for the stuff, you know, and that doesn't make me feel really good, but it's an honest program. I did it for the stuff, and, you know, you know, I was younger than he was, and, you know, he thought that, you know, he had his little trophy wife, and this girl's a little hard to tame. And so, from the moment we landed back in Seattle, it was hell. You know, it was a rough marriage. He was an Arab. That should have told me a clue right there. And he held me hostage, in a sense. I mean, you know, he liked that party girl, but once he got married, it was like, you can't do that anymore, you know? And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, the secret started again, and I would drink, you know, I tried to control it again, and, you know, he didn't know how much I was drinking, and it got ugly. It got really ugly. And one night I went to get Chinese, and I didn't come back. And true story, we ordered Chinese, and I was going to go get it, and it wasn't ready, and I sat at the bar, and there was friends, people I hadn't seen in a while, and I never went home. And those are the crazy things that we do, you know, as alcoholics. And but that was my spin into hell on earth. You know, I at that point, it was a couple of years before I got sober, and those 2 years, I it was horrible. You know, I would wake up in places that, you know, I wouldn't want any of us to wake up in. And you know, I don't like to, you know, think that they're my quotes, but I heard a woman at a meeting say she would always start out all dressed up in really nice bars, you know, with carpeting, and then she would end up in taverns with, like, you know, peanut shells all over the floor. And that was me, you know, that was me. I would start out with the idea that it was going to be a nice evening, and the more I drank, and, you know, I started hanging with people just like me, but, I mean, they were dangerous people, you know. I got involved with a group of people in Seattle that were selling drugs, and I And they weren't, you know, low-lifers in any sense. They were doctors and lawyers, and one was a district attorney, and, you know, it was the Yuppie Ring in Seattle in the 80s, and I was, you know, I wanted to be a part of it because it seemed really cool, and so I decided that I was going to, you know, they said, hey, do you want to, you know, pick up the stuff in Florida and pass it on you and bring it back to Seattle? And I was like, sounds great. You know, every time I did that stuff, I was totally drunk. You know, I, you know, when I was drunk, I could act pretty straight, and, you know, I would get whipped at the airport, get there, pick up whatever I had to do, and, you know, I think about every time today when I go through a security, I still sweat, because I think, what the hell was I thinking? But, you know, things were not as, you know, tight as they are today, and I did, you know, 3 or 4 of those trips, and it all came down, and I decided that, you know what, I don't want to get busted, I'm going to go to rehab, and that's what I did in 1986. I went to rehab, and I went there to be safe. I had no intention of quitting drinking. I just knew, I heard that if you go there, you can, you know, be safe, and they can't get to you, and by the grace of God, that happened. After a couple of weeks of detoxing and, you know, taking me to meetings and doing all those things, you know, I asked, you know, when do I learn how to drink? And, you know, the counselor said, it comes in the last week. So those of you that are in any kind of rehab, it doesn't happen. I'll let you know that right now. But, you know, I left there, and I was scared to death. You know, I was scared to death. You know, I was still married to that man, and, you know, I decided maybe I'd live with him for a year and see how that went, you know, and I say a year because I was going to meetings, and I got a sponsor, which he actually got me, and, you know, she said, don't make any decisions for a year, and so I did what she told me, and he continued to drink, and he continued to just be an alcoholic, and I just couldn't do it. At 1 year and 1 day, I was done. And, you know, my life started about then. You know, I already was working the steps. I had an amazing sponsor. I was going to 2, sometimes 3 meetings a day. I started working, and, you know, my career in just 1 year, it just took off. And I don't know what it was. It wasn't so like about 90 days that I finally raised up my hand and said I was an alcoholic, you know, but all I knew is that my life got better when I didn't drink. You know, something happened that physically I felt better, and mentally I didn't have the shame that I had when I drank. You know, I did some outside therapy for other issues, and, you know, I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, all my friends and, you know, everyone I knew at that point, even a lot of the people I worked with were in Alcoholics Anonymous. I moved back to Tulare because this time I thought I would try getting married sober. And actually my family met him before I married him. I mean, that's what a concept. And, you know, truly, I thought I was doing the right thing with the marriage, but I moved here about 7 years sober, and that was in 1993, and it was difficult, you know, but I threw myself into, you know, AA as much as I could. People like John C. over there, I remember him that first year, and I remember seeing a lot of people that I knew from my past, you know, Big Dave, and I was like, oh my God, you know, it's like this is going to be good. And I've seen a lot of you in this room get sober, you know, girl. And, you know, I got to tell you, it was about, in 2005, my mother was dying, and of course, you know, I thought I had dealt with all the resentment, and I hadn't, and my marriage was falling apart, and I was thrown into this program. I was sponsoring women. I was speaking. I was going to conferences. I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing except taking care of my own sobriety. And, you know, people that know me today, that's a real issue for me, is controlling everything around me, you know. And, you know, I was doing everything for everyone else but me, you know. I had been so many years in Alcoholics Anonymous that the first thing I would do every morning was pray and just say thank you. You know, I'd go to bed at night with whatever issues I had, and, you know, I'd say, God, take me. And I quit doing that. You know, I became my own God. And it all started with a headache. I picked up a pill, and I was off to the races for two and a half years. And shortly after that, about a year and a half later, you know, my best thinking is, you know, what got me here. And my best thinking told me if I drank to get off the pills, I would be okay. And then I could come back and everything would be great. Well, I'm here to tell you that the disease is progressing as we sit here. I picked up that drink, and it reminded me of maybe that sixth time in my 20s that I picked up that drink, and it went through my body, and everything was going to be okay. But the difference this time is I had these rooms in my head and in my heart. And for any of you that have flipped, I'm telling you, it is hell. It is an insanity that I can't even tell you. And I wish that I would have, you know, how people just leave the program. You know, they just quit going to meetings and they quit picking up their phone with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do that. You know, I went back to being the liar, the deceiving self, you know, wanting approval still, and I went to meetings. I never went to a meeting drunk, and I'm not trying to rationalize here, but I never went to a meeting drunk, but I definitely would leave a meeting and drink, you know. I thought that truly, I don't know what I was thinking, you know. I want to say that, you know, I know that it was my spiritual connection with God. And he had done so many great things in my sobriety, you know, when I decided to turn my will and my life over to the care of him, my life was incredible. And I just felt like when I was in that flip, that there's no way he's going to save me again. You know, that's where that alcoholic thinking goes in your head. And, you know, I say by the grace of God now. It really pissed me off then. But, you know, I wasn't even calling in my own prescriptions. I was calling in my husband's prescriptions. And we split up. And, you know, there are no coincidences. You know, I thought I covered my tracks pretty well. And that day, and that was the only time in all that flip, that the pharmacy didn't have all the drugs. So they called him and said, you're going to have to pick up your drugs tomorrow. And I only talk about this because it's a huge part of how I came back. And he's like, what drugs? I haven't taken any drugs in years. And I was busted. And, you know, he could have been really hateful, and he could have, you know, he went down to, I think it was Walgreens in Tulare, and you know, he wanted to see the printout, and they showed it to him, and they said, if there's anything that you feel that you can't agree with, you know, we can call the cops now, and, you know, she can, or whoever, they didn't know I was his wife at that point, you know, we can have her arrested. And all of a sudden, he said he had a clear memory that it was his, because he didn't want me to get in any kind of trouble. With that, you know, we weren't together, so he called up my family, it's, you know, kids that I raised, and they called the sponsee that I had been sponsoring, and they called Charlie M. And, you know, I had just moved into this house. I'd been in this house maybe 3 weeks, and it was like 5:30 in the afternoon. It was on the 12th, and of July 2008, and I thought there was going to be a housewarming. I was like all excited, and I opened up the door because my family was in the front, and then the six girls that I sponsored were behind them, and then I saw Charlie, and I knew, you know, Charlie wouldn't be coming to a housewarming. And that was probably a bottom that I never want to forget, because the humiliation that I had, and, you know, they were all ready to do the TV intervention, and of course, still me being in control, I'm like, I already know why you guys are here, I'm going to take care of it, there's nothing to worry about, and they go, no, you're going to listen to us, and I'm like, shit, you know, and I wasn't drunk, and I wish they would have came a little bit later, but anyway, it was humiliating, you know, and I was angry. I was angry because how dare you guys talk to me that way? I have much more time than you do. Yeah, you know. Thank God they did it. You know, my family. You know, they had never, to this day, they never saw me drunk. They had no idea I had those other issues. But they were there. You know, they were there to help me. And, you know, I wish now I didn't go to rehab, because it was a lot of money, and I know where, you know, I know where I get sober. It's in these rooms, you know, but I was too embarrassed to just walk in. It's been a tough, you know, it'll be 19 months this month, and it's been really humiliating, and but I'm now comfortable with my story, you know, and I know that Alcoholics Anonymous works. And honestly, the last year has been it's been so different than any years that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I really think I am who I am, and I don't have to, you know, be screaming off podiums, which I'm here today, but my sobriety is my sobriety, you know, and my story is my story, and I have a wonderful sponsor that, you know, my thinking, I didn't pick her, you know. I had to have a sponsor before I got out of rehab, and Charlie M., he's a great guy, I know you guys know who he is, but, you know, he found her, we met, and I was so worried that this woman was not going to judge me, and you know what, the best thing was is that she didn't know me, and, you know, I did my steps with her, and, you know, I call her up and she doesn't judge, you know. And I'm trying to do that again today. I'm sponsoring again. I feel I do have something to offer. I got to tell you, though, you know, I wish, you know, we were at a countdown this weekend, and, you know, people with 24 years getting up, and it hurts. You know, I chose to drink. I didn't lose anything. I gave it away. All because I wasn't willing to put God first. So, do I have like 5 more minutes? You know, my suggestions, you know, and I even sponsor differently today, you know. I've always known that, you know, God is my higher power, but I really try to, right off the bat, instead of trying to be, you know, not so, you know, scare them off, that, you know, not talk about God. And I talk about God, you know. This time in my recovery, I'm back in church. I have a woman's Bible study that I go to every Thursday. And I feel that I'm worthy of that today, you know. I came in here as a broken woman, and, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a lady. You know, and there's a lot of women I see sitting around there, and, you know, it doesn't matter where we've been, you know, no matter what we've done. You know, I've done some horrendous things, you know. In a blackout, I took off out of a bar with a biker from Seattle to Spokane, if anybody knows how far that is. And it was in the Dan CNA, you know, I don't know how old you guys are. I know some of you are quite young, but, you know, the Dan CN, you know, Saturday Night Fever dress and really long hair, and ended up in Spokane. And woke up, and like, where are we? And I see this big old billboard that says Spokane, and I'm like, but I live in Seattle. And he's like, yeah, babe, you rode on the back of my Harley. And I'm like, oh, Lord, I don't remember any of it, you know. And my hair was like one big wad, and, you know, and I didn't quit. That's the amazing thing about alcoholism. You know, that should have been enough for any normal person to say, I mean, from Seattle to Spokane, it's almost like 5 hours on a Harley. I hate those things. You know, and, but I, the only reason why I share that, if there's any women in here that are looking at me and thinking, oh, she doesn't understand, and she probably doesn't even know what it's like. Well, I do know what it's like, and that's just one of the stories, you know. If anybody wants to hear any more women, I'll tell you after. But, you know, like when Jill was introducing me, what a wonderful introduction, because I do like to have fun in sobriety, you know. I laughed so hard this weekend that I thought that I hurt my ribs, which I don't think that's what it was, but I laughed so hard. You know, they have these speakers, and they can laugh at the shit that we do, you know. And, you know, this one guy, he's like talking about the committee in his head with his little hand, and it's like, shit, that committee goes off. And, you know, I'm a landlord, and those people in my brain don't pay rent, but they're there, and it really pisses me off. And, you know, all I can tell you, if you're new, and there's lots of new people in here, you know, if you really want to stay sober, just go to meetings, get a sponsor, and don't drink in between. You know, I love when I hear people say that they didn't do it perfectly, but they didn't drink. I wish I could have said that. You know, I can't say that. I did it for a lot of years, but, you know, I don't know what happened or why, but I now can look at it as, you know, it's part of my story, and I hope that when you listen to stories in Alcoholics Anonymous, that you look for the similarities, not the differences, because the similarities will keep you here, the differences will not want you, you know, you won't want to come. And, I just have one quick thing I'm going to read, and then I'll be done. And it's one of my favorite stories in the big book. It's a woman alcoholic. And you can find it, well, in the new edition on 268, and it's The Keys to the Kingdom, and it's a wonderful woman's story. And this is the last two paragraphs. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache, so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never need return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys to the kingdom. So with that, thank you for letting me share with you tonight.